What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
Greetings, colleagues. My name is Daryl.
And this is Jennifer, and welcome to the Defocus podcast.
And today we have a very special guest. Our guest has changed the face of optometry. Some consider him as innovative and great, while others feel like he has a negative impact on our profession. Either way, we're going to ask him all the tough questions. Friends and family, I'd like to welcome Mr. Vitor Palamona from iNetra. Vitor, how are you doing today, sir?
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
We are doing very well. Thanks for asking. And thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to Dr. Lyerly and I.
No worries. This is all good.
Very nice. Well, let's get started. I'd like for you to just take a few minutes to just tell us about yourself. Tell us, how did you get into the eyes, and where did the idea for iNetra come from?
Sure. So I'm an engineer by background, right? I started studying computer science, back there in Brazil, in one of the rural cities. Got into, you know, many different phases of computer science, from enterprise software down to mobile apps and games, and it was all going really good, to the point I actually decided to do a master's degree. And my master's was actually very funny because I did inside a computer science department, but working with intensely, including going to the laboratories and so on, with the ophthalmologist in a nearby hospital. So I was processing retinal imaging, trying to understand their patient flow and design systems to help them simply do their work better, right? Just like we do in many, many companies around here. And that got me to, you know, to learn a lot about the eye, physiology, pathology, and how much help the doctor is still needed to get from pieces of equipment that, in order to do a nice evaluation of the person that was just coming in. Most of the work I did there was in hospital, so you might imagine that very crazy flow of people that have anything from simple eye conditions all the way down to very troublesome health statements that from the doctors. And you know, when I came to MIT to do my PhD, one of my professors, Professor Ramesh Raskar, from the MIT lab, just looked at me and said, "Listen, since you know so much about, you know, the eye and how refractive error works, how many pathologies you have involved in that particular science, why don't we try to understand how we could use our theories?" I don't know if you know, but in 5 years or 7 years ago, actually, we had a camera that went out that it could essentially refocus after you take the picture. So it's more like, you know, you take the picture without considering your frame or your point of focus, and then on post-production, you would just refocus. This camera is called Lytra, and it still sells today. And that the science behind Lytra was very common to our lab. And we simply say, "Listen, let's do a Lytra, but for ophthalmology, right? Since we can refocus after, we can make everything in software and compensate for the refractive error after capturing the data from the patient." And this is essentially my PhD thesis, is how to connect these two theories together and use the benefits that were invented for photography and for other fields related to capturing nice images of the world back into something that is medical, that is that has to have a sense of precision and accuracy on those results. And this is how the Netra autorefractor started. Started very small as a simple clip-on, right, for the phone that you just look inside and you move a few lines on screen, and you could get your prescription right there without, the refractive error right there, without having to go for any bigger equipment or go even travel to the clinic if you just wanted to get the refractive data of your eye. And from there, we spun out of MIT in 2012. So we're about 4 years outside the lab, developing the company. Then we created these other devices, one to measure the lenses, right, the glasses that people have. And the idea is, you know, once you can give anybody their data for the refractive error that they have on their eyes, the next question is, okay, I see the numbers. I don't know what they mean. Do I need to change my glasses based on those numbers or not? And, you know, the question is answered by simply measuring the glasses that they already have today. And when you do both of them, the next question becomes, so how do I trust this device? How can I make sure this the two measurements are accurate and that I like what I'm going to buy, right? The new glasses. So then we did a small portable four-opter so that people, either technicians or doctors, could take it to the field and use it to validate the results out of the autorefractor or the lensometer. The three technologies go together into an ERP that iNature developed, an EMR that iNature developed. And from there, you can have the patient information, the scheduling platform, the payments that you usually have in clinic with insurance claims and so on, all the way down to filing the prescription and offering, if you are an OD or an MD, offering your own eyeglasses to that particular patient. And everything is managed online. You can simply sign up and start essentially collecting this new data in a very different way from what you usually do.
So tell us a little bit about the products that you have. It sounds like there's a lensometer, a portable four-opter. What exactly individual product line do you have?
Yes, so we have a lensometer, right? A portable four-opter and an auto-refractor, right? The auto-refractor is performed subjectively by the patient, so it's not really an auto in the usual perspective of auto-refractor, but because the patient gets the results that are very similar to the accuracy of an auto-refractor, we usually call them the same, just to make sure people don't misunderstand what we have. For instance, we could call it subjective refractor, but you know, it doesn't replace the subjective refraction ODs do. So it's not really the same category. We still prefer to call it an auto refractor.
Wow. Well, currently, how many prescriptions have you written in the U.S. as well as worldwide?
So none. Since, you know, at the company, we are engineers, we are technologists, we build the technology for doctors to use. So none of our experiments or none of our either business experiments or side-by-side trials or even our own services that we released were prescription generated by people at the company. It's always a partner or a licensed eye care professional in the state or in the country that end up doing the final review, the final assessment, and then refining the prescription to his own standards of care.
So currently, where you have doctors writing the prescriptions, are they physically on-site also seeing the patients, or are they in an off-site location getting information from a portable device and writing a prescription just via the internet?
It depends on the state and the country. Some states require them to be in the presence of the patient, so they need to go there. And in those states, I think, in general, our biggest user audience is for the devices is these ODs and MDs that are leaving the office to provide either school testing or workplace testing or forms of diagnostics outside their clinics. And then they take our little bag of tools and everything else is connected online so they can perform a full refractive evaluation and in some cases comprehensive eye exam together at the point of care that the patient most cares about, let's say their company, for instance. And in other states where the regulation allows the OD to be online, he can be online and then send a technician maybe or send a part-automatic technician to the place. MDs have more freedom on this. They can delegate refraction to ophthalmic technicians. So for them, it's a bit easier to do this delegation and to be online. And then outside the U.S., we have, depends on the country, we have models, say like the Japanese model, that you don't really have a prescription. There is no doctor writing a prescription. The patient population sees eyeglasses just like they see the shoe that they are buying. So they are trying to get, they know that, for instance, their number is 6, right? And they're and depending on the brand, they're gonna go for 6.5 or maybe 5.5, right? And they know that when they're buying glasses, that is actually an experimentation with their own eyes, and if they don't like, they can replace and so on. But the whole ecosystem for eye care, for refractive care at least, in Japan is very different. And then we have countries like Brazil, for instance, that the ODs and MDs, they cannot sell the glasses, so they can only prescribe. And then they can choose to do telemedicine or not, but they cannot offer the glasses as a solution for the problem that the patient has, right? They can only prescribe. All the way down to, say, India, that in India, there is very little regulation on what optometry can and cannot do, or what any other person can and cannot do in terms of refractive care, and where then they allow most technicians to simply do refractions and try to support the, you know, the vast number of people that are today not being served by the optometrists that are in the country, just because you don't have enough optometrists to cover the population. So the use case changes a lot based on where they are. As a company, we try to provide the technology that is that can be used in multiple use case scenarios like that, including ones, for instance, that we talk a lot about mission work in optometry, and we have customers doing sending the refractive kit down to parts of Africa, India, and Asia. And leaving the kit with a local community in a local center. They train one of the villagers there to perform refractions. And then the OG from the US just keeps reviewing and essentially guiding that technician on how to learn and how to prescribe, how to get the data that the OG feels is most important for that particular population. So there are multiple models, and those include, say, real-time telemedicine, where the OD and the technician are talking while refracting that person. We have video telemedicine. We have completely unsynchronized refractions, where you just have, say, messages on WhatsApp going back and forth to try to refine a prescription from a person, from an OD to a technician. So the model really changes significantly based on where you are and what the standards of care on each part of the world allows us to do.
Now, Vitor, a quick question for you. With so many hands being involved in regards to finding a refraction, don't you feel like there may be some room for error in regards to that?
Well, there is always room for error, right? But then what you consider is that what is your acceptable prescription for a given population? For instance, in India, most ODs will not prescribe oblique axis. They will simply round up to 90 or 180 degrees. While we could go there and simply say that's the wrong way to do it, in the end, is they have the training and the license to take that decision. So it's a bit of, although we as a company would like to make it, perfect all the time, we also know that there are other players that have the knowledge to take decisions that go beyond what the technology can measure and can offer in many cases.
So are India and Africa your biggest markets?
No, actually, my biggest market is the U.S. 65% of my devices are being used in the country, and majority of cases for workplace testing and schools testing. We have devices, in some states, for instance, we have school teachers that are playing essentially with the kids and screening them if they find anything that is different than what the kid is already wearing on the glasses. So it's a fun engagement in their case. They are not really prescribing whatsoever, but it helps to give that education about eye care right on the early days of school.
So it sounds like, just to kind of separate what iNetra does versus other auto refracting services out there, it's not a patient goes online looking for a prescription and they take a test on their own computer, but these are actual physical devices that a company, a corporation, or a doctor would individually purchase and use in their own office as a supplemental tool.
Correct. And in some cases, because the devices are low cost, for instance, we have ODs and MDs that would like to track the progression of myopia over time, for instance, and then they either lend or they resell the device to the customer so that the patient can have the device at home and then do, say, one test every day, you know? But most of what the company is trying to do as we compare to other competitors of ours or other people in the same field is trying to manage a comprehensive eye exam with a similar accuracy you see on the clinic, but outside the clinic. And you need to change the technologies that you use in order to do so. For instance, if you use a regular autorefractor or a regular Shock-Hartmann wavefront sensor on a van, you know that you're going to need to recalibrate those devices every week, and that might be costly for you. Our devices, because they were designed to be portable and mobile, they don't need that additional calibration procedure. So, and they're much cheaper, so you can actually build more of these mobile vans based on our technology than, you know, with a regular equipment. So the idea is how we can get a comprehensive eye exam. And iNature is doing only refraction for now. But the end goal is to get a comprehensive eye exam in the hands of the patient, so that they can get his own measurements, and the measurements itself can alert the doctor when things change, when things need a further assessment, and then the patient goes back to the clinic. Is that question that everybody asks, right? So what's the rule behind the two-year expiration date for prescriptions, right? Or 1 year for contacts? What's there in terms of science? It's not much in terms of science. It's just an average that we know people might, their prescriptions might change after that time or because of other securities that you want to put in for other conditions. But there's not, it's just an average, right? That is, the prescription might change before it expires, as well as it might not change after it expires. And that is just a very inefficient system. Ideally, what you want to know is when it changes, I want to know right now, because you know that usually means something else, something is going on with that eye, and I want to know immediately. So if we allow that type of technology to happen, it changes the system in a way that fundamentally we have been doing over the past years. So, we usually think about the thermometer, right? The thermometer is a very simple tool that almost every person in the world knows how to use it and has saved lives of many people throughout the globe. The idea of the natriometer is so simple because it's a simple binary decision. Nobody understands what 100 degrees on their body does to their own cells, and what does that temperature mean? Nobody understands that, but they know that if it crosses the red mark on the thermometer, they need to seek for medical attention right now. So imagine something like that for optometry, something that is as powerful as a thermometer for usual medicine, but back into the eyes, say for refraction or for diabetic retinopathy and other conditions that we might see that might require urgent care, and giving the tools to the patient will just enhance the care we can give to them.
So I have one question for you on that. I think that your goal there is very, very lofty and very good for patients. There are so many medical conditions of the eye that won't be associated with the prescription change. So how often are you thinking a patient should go and see a doctor to try to find those sorts of medical conditions? For example, glaucoma, that's totally painless and won't change their prescription.
Correct. Well, that is mostly on everyone's personal doctor. I have seen people asking for, patients to come back in a month or patients to go back in 2 years, up to 10 years as in Canada. And there is not really a big rule on that. You have to consider the status of that patient. Today on the company, we only do refraction, that is for sure. And we try to make it very clear that today is just refraction. But we will come into other technologies like retinal imaging, topography, tonometry, and at least these three technologies that would give patients a little bit of more information than what they have with just a refractive technology, and we will start to bring all this information together into a single portal that you can have maybe more measurements over time than what we see today in our practice. So the idea is to help them screen for these conditions, and when it's time to take an action, we have enough history to take a better decision than what we have today.
So I do have some questions for you just concerning about what are the limitations of the refractive software? Like, how can you determine the reading prescription as well as a distance prescription? What about prism for someone with double vision? Are there areas that you can test for those sorts of things?
So currently, it only does measure for distance vision, so myopia, hyperopia, and astigmatism. We do have a suggestion for the ad power because it's not really validated yet. But we do have a suggestion for the doctors that are using, if you want to consider that as a starting point for the reading power. It gives us some feedback to see if the tool is working as we think it does. And then we don't do yet any binocular evaluation. Although the device is a virtual reality device, it's a binocular device, so it's very simple to add those tests just because, you know, scientific literature have already exposed many different ways to measure for prisms and other conditions right there on virtual reality devices, for instance. So it won't be hard, but we have not yet invested on those tests.
Now, with all this technology, and again, I go back to the possible risks of error, and I know error could take place on at any given time, what do you do in regards to patients? Do they sign a disclosure of some sort saying that they understand that this technology is not checking the overall health of the eyes and that it's not a true comprehensive routine eye exam?
So we try to make it clear to the doctors and to the people that are actually buying our devices, which are usually, or I think in all of them, all of the cases, are eye care professionals in one way or the other, that this is just a, so for instance, the refractor is just a replacement for the autorefractor. Don't think that it's doing anything else. It's just that, right? So if the same way you wouldn't use the autorefractor to prescribe directly from it, don't use ours to do so. And then for the patient really talks to the doctor more than what he talks to us. We have a little advice on the device itself, but usually they don't even read. They just go straight to the test, and they, you know, then the doctor comes back saying and refining the data and explaining what that was. So we try to focus more into what the doctor tends to say than saying ourselves, especially because, you know, we are a global player. So, you know, in multiple countries of the world, you might see very different ways to use the device, and we don't want to interfere one another, right? But for instance, in cases in where people were signing up for our intake forms online, for instance, when if the doctor opts to use that part of the system, it does have a very big disclaimer saying, if the doctor is only using refractor and not really doing a comprehensive exam, there's a very big disclaimer saying this is just a refractive test instead of a comprehensive exam. This is what it does. This is what it doesn't do. You are still required, in case of the US, you are still required to come back to the office every 2 years based on the date of your previous prescription, not on this measurement.
So Vitor, how do you envision a future where optometrists and iNetra can work together? I mean, what are you currently doing to develop a relationship where it's tech-derived prescriptions and ocular health assessments will actually take place? And what's the time span in regards to that?
So we already started doing many pilots across the U.S. And the world with these different models of care for the patient, right? For instance, is it fair to split refraction from comprehensive exams? That's one of the questions that everybody have, right? Can you do that? Is that something that will break the patient's care or not? In other ways, can you take your equipment, which is our equipment, can you take it to the consumer's home and provide the same level of care at their own homes that you can do at the clinic? Can you take them to the companies? Can you go out? Can you reach out to the population and then maybe provide in a more efficient or in a better way that you can do from an office? You know, because optometrists have so much training, and we feel that it's important for optometrists to go out and talk to people. Optometrists should not be, you know, spending their times with instruments or trying to make things work or behind walls. They should be out talking and getting people to the understanding of the care that they need to get. And this is something that we deeply believe on, and it's something that we are partnering with for other ODs and other MDs to try to find models of care that make sense, that are better, that are more efficient, and also that can bring more patients into the you know, the eye care space, right? We know that, for instance, it's we do have in the U.S. A number of people, 300 million people, that if you just compare to the amount of 40,000 ODs that we have, we might need to do about 25 visits per day. And we know that the average in the US is about 8 per OD, right, per day. So it's 8 visits is too low today on as an average case. There are less, there are more, but on an average, it's okay. So if you think about that, it's like, how can you support, if you just take a very simplistic question, how can you support the entire US population in a healthcare system that can actually serve them without having to, say, double or triple the amount of medical professionals in the field today? And because we know, doubling these highly trained individuals will take forever. We did some very early estimations on this, and we take almost 200 years to double the amount of ODs we have in the U.S. today. So there has to be a better way to address this. And we're exploring with different partners, with customers that are today buying the devices, that are today making it happen, better ways to do that.
So what would you say to an optometrist who's worried about their future, who thinks that their profession might not exist anymore? Do you feel like you're trying to replace healthcare as we know it, or what would you say to them to reassure them that's not what these sort of technologies are made for?
So it's an interesting question, because many many ODs, medical professionals, and other most skilled professionals are very scared these days. Some comes from the artificial intelligence perspective, that robots can replace everything that humans do, and so on. And in our little field, the optometrists and ophthalmologists have fear of technology, right? Because technology will get things done for the doctor over time. It always will always improve what technology can do, and so that the OD doesn't need to do. However, if you think about, I'm a software person by background, I know that artificial intelligence and these mechanisms are so far away from replacing any medical profession whatsoever that it's not going to happen very quickly. And our technologies, the technologies we see today, for instance, don't have, if they are saying that they can replace, they're being very stupid. I don't think they can get anywhere close to replace what a medical profession can do, just because, for instance, in the refraction, right? We do refraction. We can measure the refractive power of the lens. We are not, say, taking a picture of the eye to look at anything else. We are just measuring that very specific number on somebody's cornea and lens. That is not enough, clearly, right? If you see a doctor with simple 3-4 questions can get much more information than what we can ever do with our computers and cell phones and everything integrated. So I think the fear of technology replacing what a doctor does is unfounded. There is no evidence for that. What technology does is to make the professional's job easier or faster or better, right? So in our case, for instance, we can reduce the stress of the system by allowing people to conduct refractions before even talking to an OD. And then when the OD comes in, he said, okay, you already have your refraction, maybe my technician already helped you over, and I just need to double check these measurements, I need to ask a few more questions, I need to see if the remaining exams that I asked you to do, if they are done, if they correlate well with no other condition, then I can prescribe you. Otherwise, I'm going to give you some more activities to do. And so technology helps everybody on how to make themselves better. And it should always be used as a tool, not as as something that can threaten you on how to do it. It's more like, the smart cars of today, right? You can you can find Tesla doing self-driving cars. Do they self-drive? Well, kind of, but not really. They are starting with an autopilot that can at least brake before you brake. So in some ways, the car is helping you to avoid an accident. And from there, they will keep evolving the technology. So someday, maybe, you can completely remove the need for the driver. But up to, you know, when we get there, we're going to have a very different society than what we have today.
So Victor, why do you think optometrists are so scared of refraction software coming into the marketplace? I mean, what is the big challenge that our profession is facing, in your opinion?
An awesome question. I think from coming from an outsider, from an engineering background, outside, you know, I'm not an OG or any of that. For me, the biggest problem optometry has today is a branding issue. Is the fact that every patient across the globe relates optometry to eyeglasses and eyeglasses only, right? This started from the fact that the field itself started to undersell the chair time and to make profits on the eyeglasses sale. So if you are, each one of the doctors out there that are practicing today are essentially saying to the patient, listen, my time is not as valuable as this brand that you can wear. And people are accepting that. So this branding, this branding policy goes really into the patient's head. So if you do any research, any unbiased research, you will see that patients in the U.S. will connect eyeglasses to optometrists. They will not connect comprehensive eye exams to optometrists. And maybe the problem of education that we all talk about is way too expensive to change that branding perception. You know, coming from a startup, I know very well what that is. Once they get to know what they are getting from that professional, it's really hard, or from that brand, it's really hard to change. So, and one of the solutions here is simply, okay, so you get a group of optometrists that we will spin out of optometry and call them, say, preventive care doctors, right? And these preventive care doctors will open preventive care clinics, not optometry clinics, such that when a patient is going there, he is going and he is paying and he is on his head thinking about, I'm going for a preventive exam. It has nothing to do with my glasses, although the work that he is doing is essentially the comprehensive eye exam we see today in the office. What this does is it allows the OG to increase their own value of on the supply chain. So now the OG can actually have a conversation with the patient about the comprehensive eye exam part of it, and how to get that care that, you know, all the ODs really care about. That, you know, most of this field today is not about the glasses. The glasses is something ODs are required to do. They started doing it. But what they care about, what they deeply connected with, is the care component and how to make that person have a better life or have a more productive vision, right? So in that perspective, you can think about, you know, on how can you move forward? You have two different views. You have this misconception, which could be in an investor's perspective, for instance. I would say it's way too expensive to change that mindset on the customer. And as a flip side, you have this maybe neat idea of like spinning off doctors from a field into another field that breaks that link. And then you can, with the same professionals you have out there, same communities, same types of individuals, you can start a complete different conversation with the patient. And that seems to be, at least to me, which is I'm an outsider to all this, an easier, faster, and cheaper way to solve the comprehensive eye exam problem, or at least the perception of that problem from the patient's perspective.
So knowing that patients do perceive the eye exam as the refraction, do you think it's dangerous to give them a way of getting refraction with a prescription separate from an ocular health examination?
Well, it's certainly dangerous if you don't tell that, you know, that they still need the comprehensive eye exam. I mean, it's all about can they understand that they're getting part of the comprehensive exam or not, right? If they can, maybe great. I mean, the Japanese model works like that. So it's something that is on the culture of the patient. Can he understand? And if you can, great. I don't think Americans are prepared for that yet. They might not understand. But the flip side of that is that I do believe the field will need to address this problem very shortly. And AOA and other organizations are trying to educate patients. Not sure if they're being very effective on it, but the idea is, you know, that problem must be solved. And in order to give care, you need to teach the patient what that care is about. And part of what we do here, for instance, is just to speed up everything else so that ODs can talk. You can talk to a patient. If you don't talk to him, you're not going to convince them or you're not going to give him the care that ODs want to be giving. You know, that's what ODs care about. So I think, you know, we are too tied to the eyeglasses world and the revenues and how this whole field operates. And as soon as you realize that, you know, price points of big companies like Luxottica and other big brands of $400 do not serve the poor, they barely serve the middle class, you will like, okay, now you know that that model will not sustain and definitely will not offer solutions for everybody in this country. So then you see other solutions like $100 glasses from Warby Parker or Zenni Optical, you know, $10 glasses. If you think about millennials, they were born in the internet. They know how to search for these different price points. And if they don't see any difference on, say, styles or different materials, they will buy the cheapest ones. So I think the millennials will definitely force the price down of the eyeglasses, which will then change the way the optometrists operate. You cannot rely on the revenue from the glasses sale anymore. So you got to go back to the basics, saying, I need to do a very nice, interesting eye exam, because that's what the person, the patient is paying me for. The other thing is just like whatever he chooses as his style or his quality for lenses that, you know, sometimes they may not see any difference with them. If he chooses, he wants to see something better with a more expensive price and he can pay for it, great. Most of them will not. So if you think about that, you know, you got to go back to the basics. Can we do provide a nice care to the majority of the population that might not go for, you know, fashion statements, which these brands are all about.
Now, you mentioned Luxottica earlier. Does your brand plan on, or do you guys plan on joining any big giants in the industry such as Luxottica at some point in time?
We are working with many of them. We believe that the customers need options. So, you know, and having branded designs really help to raise the bar in some ways. For instance, you know, the new transitions, the new types of lenses that we see, all the conversation about blue light is all generated by companies that have a higher price tag and can actually invest on research. So in some ways, that is a necessary part of this ecosystem. In other ways, you know, you need to provide options for people that, you know, today in America don't have any way to actually purchase any of those. So do you prefer to not give the solution or to give a solution that is cheaper and probably the person will see some visual effects based on that, but is better than nothing. And this, we usually talk this, the conversation of is better than nothing is usually very common on the developing countries situation. And but if you think about the US, you see a very similar situation in this country.
So I think one of the really interesting points that you're raising in this that I really appreciate is this equipment technology is able to give us refractive information, very good, very accurate refractive information. But in the power of the prescription, that's where the doctor and what the doctor should stand for comes from, as far as what are we supposed to do ethically as far as ocular health examination. And that's at the doctor's personal opinion and personal ethics about what they feel like when they write a prescription that should include.
Correct. And you know, the technologies, we always do one thing and probably one thing really well. The beauty of having humans, right? I joke here at the company that we don't hire, specific roles. We hire humans. So humans think, and you can learn and evolve over time. So the doctor will not stay steady in a specific time based on what he learned from school. He will keep evolving, and that evolution is likely to not be found, or at least not be as fast, from the technology's perspective, because, you know, we need to validate the equipment, we need to do the side-by-side testing. Meanwhile, DOD is already learning and seeing, you know, how new types of patients are coming in, and you might have a different prevalence of certain conditions over the other. So having that professional at the front of that battlefield is really important. It's you can't simply remove him from there. It's like it's the first barrier. It's the person that will make sense of everything. It's the person that he will actually take the readings and say, you know what, this technology sucks. I'm not going to use it anymore because it's not accurate or it's not working for this patient, and I don't know why, but it's not working. So I need to think about something that is different than I'm doing today that might capture a better data about this patient.
Victor, thank you so very much for joining us this evening. I think we've learned a lot about what your technology can do, and really thinking about a future as young optometrists. Daryl and I know new technology and new innovation is going to happen, and we have to coexist with it. So it's exciting to hear new technology that's trying to aid in what we do as doctors, and then also working with you as a software developer. And what is that technology kind of limited to doing, and where does a doctor need to step in and help, sort of thing. So I really do think there's a future where optometrists and technology are going to have to coexist, and that future is like right now. So we're going to have to work together to do what's best for patients.
We did a massive study in India for 6,000 people with many other eye conditions and health situations that try to correlate on how each one of the devices would work. And it's not yet completely clear. So though we do have the expectation of, you know, our 19 scientific papers out saying, you know, in a side-by-side population like this, in a side-by-side study like this, you can have results like that, is still a lot of learnings to be captured, especially when we place it in the field, in the hands of doctors that will be seeing patients with unique conditions that they will definitely need to come in and say, you know, you might not be able to use this reading because of certain conditions, or in this particular scenario, I can just allow you to take this measurement and you go from there.
It's very nice. And Vitor, please tell me, what's the best way for our followers and listeners to contact you? If you don't mind leaving your email address as well as all your social media handles.
So the best way to contact any of us actually is through our own webpage, inatra.com. And we have a little chat on the corner of the page, and you will be speaking directly to me or one of my engineers. At least at the company today, we only have engineers working with us, which is always good. So you're going to get straight up answers without any sales speech involved on it. And that is definitely the best way to talk to me.
And lastly, we would love to be able to open up our comment section, and we'll be honored if you can answer any questions that our listeners and followers may ask that we weren't able to ask today for this podcast interview. Are you okay to do that as well?
Sure. Make sure to keep following the page and see if how well I can answer. I'm assuming there's going to be a lot of questions. And
oh, yeah.
So definitely pay attention to the website.
So we just wrapped up a really informative interview with Victor Pamplona from iNetra. And I think the biggest take home for me from this interview was I've been thinking of this new technology as being a danger, as being a real hazard to patient care. And my perspective now is a little bit different. This is technology just like any other technology we're using currently in our exam room. It's how it's being used that could be a potential danger. So, I mean, Daryl, how do you see optometrists using this technology and making it more of our own?
Yeah, you know, Jennifer, I completely agree with you. I feel like this is something that is just like any other instrument that's actually in our office, from an autorefractor to pachymeter to OCT. I mean, there's a lot of ways that we can actually utilize this information. The key is us as optometrists utilizing this information and technology. But for example, I think it's a great tool for refraction in regards to potential research and maybe even tracking a prescription over time.
I mean, I honestly could picture having a patient sit in an exam room with an autorefractor, just like what we do with the autorefractor these days, but they're subjectively doing it. And then I come into the exam room, show them the differences in the phoropter, and continue about our exam. And it could streamline the process. I think where the danger is when it's marketed or other doctors use it as a replacement for an exam. It shouldn't even be called an exam. And I think Vitra is very careful to not call it an exam, but other refractive technologies out there aren't so careful in the words that they're using.
We have to realize that, you know, refraction, it's truly a staple to our profession. I mean, it's what gets patients into the exam room. It's no doubt about it. And I think that's something that we have to really, really guard and take pride in. I think at some point in time, we're going to have to accept some of this technology that's coming in, and we just have to learn how to utilize it. And again, I think what you just stated makes perfect sense, as well as potential tracking over time. I mean, for example, if you have a kid that comes in with amblyopia, I think sending them home with this device over, you know, X amount of months just to track the prescription over time and bring them in at that follow-up date is a great way to monitor their prescription and finalize a script in that 4 to 6 month period. Or even maybe a patient that's potentially diabetic, you know, it's a way where if they do have that hyperopic shift and there's some edema, it's a good way to track to see that prescription change over time and to see if we need to bring them in sooner than that 3 month or 6 month period that we're actually looking at. What are your thoughts in regards to that?
I think that is a great way. I mean, at first when Victor talked about a patient taking this device home, oh my gosh, all my red flags shot up. And this was, sounds like a terrible idea. But in those specific cases, yes, it could be. I mean, can you imagine someone with diabetes self-monitoring prescription changes because of macular edema? We don't care about the prescription. We're not writing them a prescription for that, but we're using it then as a medical device tool to try to find blood sugar changes that we need to control better. So, and they're the right situations. I definitely think that just like our refraction in the exam room can lead to a medical diagnosis, a self-autorefraction service could also lead to a medical diagnosis. But there has to be a physical in-office exam for that medical diagnosis to be properly made. So just separating the two out, it's never going to be practical or ethical for a patient. And that's where I think our profession and ophthalmology needs to come in and really make strong definitions about what an eye exam, what getting a prescription should be required. What are the requirements for a prescription to be written? And I think a physical eye ocular health examination should be a requirement.
So I know you just mentioned ophthalmology. Why do you think they chose ophthalmologists rather than optometrists to sign off on the prescriptions?
One, I think that people are going to be a little skeptical of the online service anyway, because it's different and it doesn't seem as official, let's be honest. And it's a good power move for the company to have an MD at the end of the signature versus an OD. And I do think they're using that to their advantage. The other part of it, though, is ophthalmology, refraction isn't their thing. They often delegate that to a technician anyway. They don't see that as the real reason why they're giving patient care. So they're a little easier to accept separating out refraction versus ocular health exam than an optometrist is. But I think that the danger in that is ophthalmology, I think they think patients will come to them when there's a medical problem. But I don't think they realize how much their business is actually from referrals, where people come in for a routine eye exam and we find the medical problem while they're there. And it's not that I find it when I do a refraction. So I do worry that there's going to be a whole segment of the population who bypasses ocular health examinations and we miss choroidal tumors or papilledema or something like that that wouldn't necessarily show up on a refraction. It's just a little bit peculiar to me. In Great Britain, just a few weeks ago, an optometrist was sentenced for a manslaughter charge because she missed papilledema. And then we're talking about signing a prescription online without seeing a patient at all in the States. So there's a big disconnect right now about what our liability is and what we need to do to give proper care. And I think MDs get a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt because of what an MD means. And they're a little bit more willing to take these sort of risks, I think. And even with the very best efforts from the AOA and the Think About Your Eyes campaign, we're still not anywhere close to as successful as what we want to be in getting out the message about clear vision is not healthy eyes. I would love to have just seen the Think About Your Eyes commercial on TV be that simple. It just, your vision might be clear, but your eyes are not healthy. You need an eye exam. You know, let's just give it to it straight up because that's the truth.
Yeah. And, you know, the one thing I will say, I will give kudos to the optometrists throughout the world because I have noticed that more optometrists are pushing for that medical aspect. You are seeing more dry eye clinics, more retinal clinics. You're seeing more hands-on in regards to the medical aspect rather than just glasses, glasses, glasses. And I think if we continue to go that route, and I think if we adapt to technology that's there, that's not going anywhere, we could definitely change the profession. But again, it goes back to education. Now, do you think there's some type of future where our profession could self-regulate requirements for an eye exam not covered by insurance?
I absolutely, and I think that's essential. That's what we've got to do right now. And I hope ophthalmology will get on board and do it in their profession as well. Crazily enough, the components of an eye exam are defined by each insurance that we accept. It's not a universal, this is what an eye exam is. But it would be so easy for leaders in the AOA to sit down at a table and write down what they think an eye exam should have in it. And if you're found not to be practicing in that way, guess what? That could be your license on the line.
Overall, Jennifer, this is a pretty interesting technology. I do feel like there is a place for it in the world of optometry. I feel like as optometrists, we need to be a tad bit more open-minded when it comes to technology. We can't live like dinosaurs. We have to move forward. I mean, just imagine life without the iPhone or the Apple Watch. We have to be more open-minded and innovative when it comes to technology. However, I do feel like three things must take place in order for technology to survive in the world of optometry. Number one, it has to definitely benefit the patient. If it doesn't benefit the patient, we need to throw it out the window. It's no doubt about it. Number two, it has to help propel the profession. You know, we have to keep optometry alive. And then lastly, it has to also help the individual practice. We are in the business of saving lives, but we also are in the business of making money. And I feel like if we can tap into those three things and it benefits those three areas that I just touched on, that is something that we should definitely look at implementing into the world of optometry. What are your thoughts, Jennifer?
Yeah, I just want everyone to take home, we're not probably going to successfully defeat this technology. This technology is going to exist. The legal system might control more of it, and we've seen it successfully do so in a few states, but we as a profession and as individual doctors even are going to have to be the ones who become the spokesperson for what we believe in and what our own ethics are. We won't be ever able to control new technology coming to the marketplace, but if we define our space and what patients should expect from an eye exam, then that technology always has to fit in to what an eye exam truly is. So I'd say don't let the technology define or disrupt us. Let's use the technology to show people what we are.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.